You were talking about the fact that some Western countries are being used as a staging ground for drones, or whether it's overflights or physical production. And you said that can put us on a slippery slope, is the word you use. Now, that is something that I've seen kind of echoed in a couple of other places, which has at least some here in the West alarmed that there may be a change, something potentially different. We had Scott Ritter on our show yesterday talking about Mr. Karaganov, and now he is saying, hey, I have advocated to the Russian government that we should use conventional missiles and strike some of these territories in Ukraine. In the West that have been helping Ukraine. You had Alexander Slatkov. He has called for an atomic bombing. The Karaganov did too. He said if the missiles don't have the conventional missiles don't have their deterrent effect, then they should escalate also into the nuclear weapon. And then we see situations like this, like this is in Russian media today. Russia has put on alert orbital anti-satellite systems. Then we have this, not only the firing of the Sarmat, but also that it seems like that there's been more effort in the security Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the SCO countries, that this is something that's it's helping Russia avoid sanctions, et cetera. And in fact, speaking of Scott Ritter, he himself is pretty alarmed because he thinks that because of things that are happening in the West, it is putting the Russian government in a position where it, quote, has to do something.
The problem is now that the attacks that are taking place are doing damage to Russia's energy infrastructure. That is having a meaningful impact on Russia's economy. It's become a strategic problem for Russia, unsustainable. And so now you've changed the equation. This is the European mistake. They've changed the equation now to make it impossible for Russia not to respond. They've escalated to the point where they've brought real harm to Russia. And so now political decisions become easy to make because you say, if we don't do anything, we are strategically defeated and Russia will not allow itself to be strategically defeated. So the Europeans have made it impossible for Russia not to respond. Mm-hmm. So now the question isn't if Russia will respond. I think the answer is they're going to, but how?
That was a pretty bold statement. So I'd like to hear your statement on that, because you talked about a slippery slope and they are hitting deeper into Russia. Is it possible that Russia would actually strike targets in Western Europe?
Well, you know, there are a number of opinions in our discussions. By the way, there are a lot of polar views from specialists, those who are involved in the decision making. We have a very vibrant society, unlike claims that are being made that everybody who is speaking out in Russian public sphere is representing Putin's view or whatever. It's absolutely not true. So there are people who are really appealing and requesting that we should strike the decision-making centers. One of them is Mr. Karaganov. His position on the acceptability of usage of tactical nuclear weapons is not something new. It has been there for some time, a couple of years at least, as far as I understand. We have also Deputy head of the Security Council, Mr. Medvedev, who usually expresses very radical views. I think it's normal for a society when there are different voices from other places saying sometimes polar things. It's on the one hand. On the other hand, I would agree with Scott that Europeans are overplayed this thing a little bit, and they are opening one after another, the so-called Overton windows, if you know what I mean. So yeah, they try to test our resolve. They try to test the threshold where we would respond. And this is a very dangerous game. Again, it seems to us that we are now the only responsible adult player on the in the continent, because everybody else, they try to behave either in a childish or in a foolish way, and absolutely they don't have any responsibility before the societies that they represent. It's not a computer game, it's not a simulation, it's a serious thing. We demonstrate that we have all the means to make our response very painful. That would be really a big blow to those who are our adversaries and who insist that they are our adversaries. We leave the doors for diplomacy open. They were open from the outset, and we were repeatedly stating that we prefer a diplomatic way to solve to solve the crisis in and around Ukraine, but nobody wanted to listen. Well, I would say that there is a big public demand right now to do something resolute, to show to our adversaries that Russia is ready to fight, that Russia will not make any concessions on its vital interests. You know, the question right now is not about not so much about the territory, I would say, which some people would say. And territory is a matter only because these regions that are in questions are part of Russia according to our constitution. And, of course, it is logical that we want to have their entirety by military or diplomatic means, which is our preference. The question is how the remainder of Ukraine, the Ukraine that would come out of this conflict, how it will look like, and what will be the norms, what will be the principles of functioning of this society, because it's absolutely out of question that this society will remain in the same nationalistic, neo-Nazi, anti-Russian, Russophobic shape. This is the key issue, and I think that is the question that our European colleagues leave aside. When it comes to the true colors of the Zelensky regime, they just pretend that nothing is happening. They don't think that they need to insist on Ukraine to correct anything. But the fact is that Ukraine is the only country in the world which officially banned another language, the Russian language, despite the provisions of its constitution which guarantee the liberty of choosing Russian language for Russian speakers who represent majority of the population still. There is not another country that behaves itself like this. Israel does not is not banning Arabic, Palestine is not banning Hebrew, United States is not banning Persian, Iran is not banning English. I think this is the only country that decided to behave in this way is Ukraine, and this is very emblematic for this regime which started its war against Russian-speaking population, which started its Russophobic campaign, and which became a mere tool in the hands of the West. And now we are fighting with the West, and the moment when it will be a direct confrontation with the West is approaching very much, and that's what I'm calling the slippery
slope. Well, and that's actually what I wanted to go down that path. I know we're running low on time, but this is crucial here, because I have talked to a number of folks in both the United States and in Europe, and certainly have read other public comments, and it is very clear when you look at the arc of this 4+ years of war now, is that there was a lot of concern at the beginning from the West that there could be an escalation, that if we did too much military help to Ukraine, it could cause Russia to potentially expand beyond the borders. And, you know, everything was done. First, it was artillery pieces, and then later it turned into tanks and other armored personnel, then lots of long-range missiles. Every time there was some concern that Russia would do something, they never did, and then it was F-16s. Early in the war, President Biden said, you know what, if it's F-16s, we're not going to do that because that's World War III. Well, you saw years later, they did use F-16s and they put them in and it didn't cause World War III. So now the view is there's literally nothing that Russia, there's no red lines for Russia. They, as long as it stays inside of Ukraine, the West has definitely got a freedom, in my observation, that there's nothing that Russia will ever do. But you're talking again about a slippery slope and a confrontation between East and West. And so therefore, I will ask, is it possible that Russia could at some point change that dynamic and say there is a cost, there is a red line, and we're going to strike something in Europe? Is that possible?
Well, that's exactly the question that many people are asking, and I believe that many people in the West, unfortunately, they confuse our humanity and our desire to avoid devastating moves for the West. They confuse it with weakness, and they say if Russia doesn't react, it's because Russia is weak. No, Russia doesn't react because Russia is humane, because Russia is thinking about the future of the humanity, of those European citizens who will be absolutely devastated by the consequences of this conflict. That's why we are hesitating. It's a serious matter to proceed. But believe me, if it affected really our vital interests, I don't think we will hesitate, and everybody should absolutely remember this. I know that my leadership, my military leadership, has a lot of cards to play still militarily, and if it doesn't use the cards that you mentioned, the means that you mentioned, then there are reasons for this. But I'm absolutely sure that there will be no hesitation, we'll not lose time if it comes to the situation when we will have to use what we need to use in such cases. And it's according to our nuclear doctrine. It is open for everybody. Everybody knows in what circumstances these weapons will be used.
Now, I know you're certainly not going to give any military secrets out over our channel here or commit your government to anything, but in the event that the decision makers in Moscow said, all right, that's it, that's it, you've gone too far, they crossed whatever red line is set in the Kremlin, and now that we're going to do something, would we expect to see some sort of, I don't know if it's an ultimatum or something from Moscow that says, all right, if this doesn't change, we're going to do this? Or would it be, no, you're just going to wake up one day and a missile is going to land somewhere and there won't be any advance warning? How might that happen?
Well, I would just advise everybody I would advise against testing the limits of our patience and the limits of our self-restraint. The fact that NATO is now directly involved in war against Russia by providing airspace to Ukrainian drones, by placing the production of drones of other warfare in their territory, I think it brings us very, very close to this conflict, which again will have very devastating consequences for European population. And I think that European population is not aware of this. It's being brainwashed, and they are hearing arguments like the ones that you cited, that Russia will never dare use anything against Europe. I wouldn't be so sure, because Europe has used everything against Russia right now. Europe is providing weapons to Ukraine. They provide the missiles that can be used only with the approval and under the control of specialists from the United Kingdom, Great Britain, France, whoever. So I think that they have already crossed all the red lines, and it's a matter of time if it continues like this. And then people will ask questions, so what did we do? Why did Russia respond so harshly and so resolutely? But it will be too late.
Well, that is about as clear as a diplomat can be on something like this. I guess we'll have to wait and see how it's going to work out. I certainly hope that...
Yeah, I just... If I may, just to not to stop at this negative note, because I'm still a diplomat and I'm not a military member of military squad, so my tool are my words and my force of conviction, as well as many others. So I just think that we still continue to do everything we can in the world through diplomatic forums, in OSCE, at the UN, on other platforms, to win back the sanity of our neighbors. I wouldn't call them partners anymore, and I don't think it's about cooperation that we can speak, but rather about coexistence, and this will be already a very good thing to do. So I'm really appealing to everyone concerned and who has any influence to analyze this situation soberly, and to understand that the fact that Russia is displaying self-restraint doesn't mean that it will continue forever. And I wouldn't advise everybody to test the limits of our flexibility and of our self-restraint. It has limits, and you shouldn't doubt them.
So it sounds to me like if the status quo remains, and if the West writ large continues to do everything it has been doing, thinking that it's impervious to any kind of counteraction, at some point there will be a Russian response across into Europe, as we see. But I guess the last question I would ask is, what would Russia have to see a change? What kind of change could they see that would say, all right, well, now we don't have to look at that path? What would that change look like?
Well, I think that there are two scenarios. One scenario is that we militarily crush Ukraine. I think that this is a very probable scenario, given the factors that I explained to you, and then the West will just have to make some efforts to save what it is, what can be saved out of the Kyiv regime and all these things. The other scenario, which seems very unlikely to me right now, is that the West, and especially European countries, they just return to their senses, and they would understand that they have gone too far and they need to stop, and that there is a high time to think about a universal formula of security, indivisible security, that would include Russian interests, because all the proposals from the West, all the moves from the West so far, were made at the expense of Russia, not taking into consideration the concerns of Russia, but at the expense of Russia. And this will not work. If you want a reliable, long-term, sustainable formula of security, first and foremost, European security, this formula should include Russia. I think it's very obvious. So I wouldn't bet very much on the second scenario, because our European neighbors have already shown that they are absolutely detached from reality. But maybe some advances, some kind of developments on the front will sober them up, and maybe we will still see the situation when diplomacy can play a role. So far, I think that nobody listens to diplomats, and frankly, to my big regret, there are no diplomats on European side that are ready to engage, that are ready to do our professional job, what we were trained for, to get together, to find solutions, to propose solutions to our capital. The ones that I face are mere propagandists that are just, you know, sharing the information that their governments are claiming to propagate everywhere. I would like to quote something that I said at yesterday's meeting of the OSCE Permanent Council, when the European neighbors launched another propaganda campaign against Russia, again based on the claims that were abducting Ukrainian children. We asked repeatedly about the facts, but they do not provide facts. They just continue to spread hearsay and to make claims that are not substantiated by anything. And this continues for years. So I just quoted the interview that the former press secretary of Zelensky and very close ally of him, Yulia Mendel, gave to Tucker Carlson a couple of days ago. She said that Zelensky, at some point when he was losing popularity and he assembled all those who are close to him, he said that he needed hundreds of Goebbels talking heads. That was her expression that I used. And I just said that the ones that I'm facing in OSCE right now, the ones that we are facing, unfortunately, in diplomatic forums from European part, they are simply these talking Goebbels heads, because they are spreading absolutely unbelievable propaganda and lies about Russia. So I really hope that they will come to their senses and that they will remember that they are diplomats, and diplomats should listen to each other and should try to inform their capitals in an unbiased way to take very necessary decisions. So far, this is not the case, and this is a source of big frustration for me. But I think I will continue still my job here, and I will try to wake up at least some of my colleagues before it is too late.
Well, yes, that's the hope of all regular people, that diplomats can do their job before it's too late, so that we don't have to get too late. And we appreciate you coming on the show today and spending your time. I know we went a little bit long. I'm grateful for your time, and thank you, Mr. Ambassador.
Thank you, Daniel.
And we will thank you guys, too. Be sure to like and subscribe if you haven't done that. And we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. You know, I don't try to talk you into buying gold or tell you how to run your stock portfolio, but there is a way you can help us. Subscribe, hit that like button, and share this with somebody you love.